Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, recording from Dallas, Texas, more specifically the suburb of Allen. I'm here with probably the most special group of guest hosts, ones I'm really excited to introduce, and we'll be talking about a movie that I'm really excited to talk about. But first, the three guests. I'm going to start with guest number one. He is the founder and editor-in-chief of SaveTheLastGame.com, a new gaming blog. It's my older brother, Preston.
Hello.
Preston's been on the pod before. What episode?
I don't know which number. It was Empire Strikes Back. We talked about Star Wars.
I don't remember which number either, mostly because the numbers...
I would have expected you to.
Yeah, our numbering system doesn't make a total sense. Make total sense because Skylar insisted on doing seasons. Our first season was like 53 pods. Our second season was like 30-something. Just basically when we feel like it, we move on to the next season.
I assume it goes like 2, 13, and then
when we have like episode 323, that's episode 3, or season 3, episode 23.
Okay, that makes sense.
So some people will be like, hey, I've been listening to your podcast, or like first time or whatever, like a coworker. Like, I can't believe you're 300 episodes in, and I will not correct them.
We've been going strong.
So you were on the Star Wars one. We talked Empire.
Yeah. Empire, yes.
Okay. All right. So guest number two is social media sensation. Someone who became the darling of the internet at the end of last year. A friend of Ashton Kutcher is my sister, Sarah Nelson. Sarah, it's your podcast debut. Your brave little debut.
Hi.
Okay.
And there it is.
Sarah just turned 33 a couple days ago, which is why we're all here together in Texas, because my two brothers and I wanted to come surprise Sarah. Well, I'll be honest, her husband wanted us to come and surprise her, and we agreed it would be a good idea. But I've talked about this on the pod, the Harry Potter note, where the gist of it, again, I don't have to rehash it. You got a mandatory attendance improvement plan from the school district here. And your idea of getting back at them was to, you tell it.
Just to be snarky, I guess. I just answered their questions on the thing, and I just said, you know, like, oh, why wasn't he at school? And I said, well, he was attending Hogwarts, and, you know, and other questions were, you know, what was he doing, you know, learning Defense Against the Dark Arts, just a bunch of silly responses.
Essentially, they wanted to know, like, how you were going to help improve his attendance, and your answer was effectively, oh, he doesn't need to improve, he was at Hogwarts.
Right.
And so that caught the internet, it lit the internet on fire. I posted on Reddit, and I got messages from producers at Good Morning America, Huffington Post, Dallas Morning News. I mean, a ton of different outlets went with it. And that's when your friendship started with Ashton Kutcher.
Yes.
And ended.
Yep, unfortunately.
But your snarkiness didn't end there. To get back at the school district, you didn't just fill out the form. You also decided to write their high school fight song. But that's unannounced. maybe we're not allowed to talk about that yet. But for those of you that are really have Google Alerts set up for news regarding fight songs for various high schools around the country, you're gonna hear some news pretty soon about Sarah. But I won't say any more. Look out for that. And lastly, I have the former head projectionist at the Century 14 Folsom. My little brother Brandon.
Love it.
Brandon, last time was also Empire?
Yeah. Okay. Wait, last, I think the only time.
Yeah.
I think it was the only time, yeah.
Yeah, I say last time to make it sound like you guys have been on more than once.
Oh, yeah, you just ruined that.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon.
It was like third or fourth or something.
So, like I said, we are here for Sarah's birthday. We will get into the circle. We had to see a movie together. We're a family of movie enthusiasts. a family of people that have two, I mean, we'll put it this way. My parents love movies so much. I get a phone call every Tuesday from our mom. And she's at Target or Walmart or, you know, whatever. And she just kind of rifles through the names of the newly released titles, whether she's seen them or not, and asks me which ones she's going to buy because she's planning on buying all of them. and it's what's funny is that she does this every week. And even though when I'm adamant about certain films, I'm like, Mom, that was a bad movie. Mm-hmm. Don't get that. She's like, cool, awesome. Thanks for your input.
And what David doesn't know is that after she's done talking to him, she calls me and asks my opinion to see if there's anything I should override because she tends to like a lot of horrible movies.
She's only called me a couple times, but I think it's because neither of you picked up.
I told her to get Suicide Squad.
You told her to get Suicide Squad? I begged her not to.
No, you did. I know, she got it.
Oh, it's so bad.
She got it so I could see it. I hadn't seen it yet. I wanted to see how bad it was.
It's really bad. It's very
bad. It is bad.
We didn't even do an episode on it.
Is that you didn't?
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
It's very bad.
Well, there is a worse movie.
Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, no. That's probably the best movie that came out this year.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I like the Circle more than Suicide Squad. we'll get into the Circle. I love the Circle, and I'll talk about all the reasons why.
because the level at which it transcends horrible is
gets to the point where it is so good.
Yes, so, I agree.
But my point in that story is that, like, you know, my parents or our parents. I say my. Whoa, we all share the same parents. I'm sure, I hope. They love movies so much. They begged us to work at a movie theater when we were growing up. I remember it started with Preston.
Yeah.
You know, he was getting close to turning 16. Like, so you're going to maybe work at a movie theater? You know, I mean, they really wanted you to work there. And you did. And you were a manager.
Aaron Robinson works there.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars is coming out. Episode 1.
Yeah. And then that's when I was first introduced to the wonderful world of free ices. and my addiction to sugar, which is still very strong to this day. Sarah followed in your footsteps, also a manager, and you were in box office primarily?
Yes.
And then I followed, not a manager. Yeah, I got as high as a manager in training before on an eventful day I walked out. And then Brandon... also not a manager, so we're the underachievers here. I mean, if there's one thing people say in the family about me especially, is that I'm just not going to amount to anything. My experience at Century is a microcosm of how my life has gone. So much unfulfilled potential. but anyway, we were going to go see a movie. Okay, that's why we went to the Circle. But speaking of movies, a quick anecdote from this weekend that's worth talking about. Sarah and Preston both have several beautiful children, and a couple not so beautiful. No.
And a couple terrible.
No. Preston's got 3 great kids. Sarah's got 4. Brandon and I someday, again, the underachievers. we were at your daughter Debrie's soccer game.
Yep.
And your youngest, Luke.
Yes.
Tell me what he was doing. Tell me. Give me some background to this obsession he has.
Luke is obsessed with sports. Any type of ball, anything that looks like a ball. Like when we were downtown Dallas, we saw the giant eyeball.
Oh.
He, you know, ball. and he very well understands the concept. I mean, he's a year and a half old. He understands the concept of. Ball goes into, you know, hoop. Ball goes into net. Goal. And so, I'll let you continue.
So he's got his own little soccer ball.
Yes.
While we're watching Debrie's game on the sideline, he is off to the side in one of the empty fields, or kind of the corner of an empty field, and Brandon is the one who noticed it. He was practicing kicking the ball into a goal. And Brandon, you saw it. What was he doing?
I looked over and I saw him. He was the ball was inside the goal, and I saw him like doing like a small circle with his hands lifted up, and I thought, oh my gosh, is he cheering because he just shot a goal? So I was like, I quickly whipped out my phone, And I started recording him. I was like, please, please, please do that again. Please do that again. He just grabs the ball, walks over to the edge of the goal, kind of like looks around, sets the ball down, kicks it in the goal. And then after it hits the end of the net, he just lifts his hands up. Yeah!
So he's practicing both the shot and the celebration. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing about it is he waits for the ball to hit the very back, the bar at the very back of the goal.
It slowly rolls in.
It's going pretty slow. It's got to hit the back, and then both hands go straight into the air.
And then he yells.
And it's really, really, really funny. And if you want to see what it looks like, I did tweet about it. So if you don't follow me on Twitter, at the DStoff, check it out. It's hilarious. So Brandon has this, what I view as a golden video. Mm-hmm. And I work in marketing. When I see content that I know will play, I can't help but distribute it. Just like when Sarah texted me the photo of the mandatory student, you know, attendance improvement plan, I saw it and I thought, this will play. People will like this. And they did. Celebrities. And so Brandon's got the phone, and I know, you know, I immediately trick him into airdropping it to me so I can share it onto Reddit. And I mean, a couple hours later, I get a message and an email from an individual with this media company called Defy Media in Los Angeles, saying that he saw the YouTube video that I uploaded to Reddit. Now, these types of people scour Reddit all day long looking for videos that they think might have the potential of going viral. And he says that he's a media kind of distribution company. And, you know, and I'd heard of this. I've had a couple friends who've had a similar kind of proposal. And he proposed a couple different things. But essentially what they wanted to do was have the rights to the video to distribute it to, you know, even like a whole bunch of outlets. And so he had offered either $150 for this video that Brandon took to have complete ownership and rights, just outright $150, or they would pay me $75 up front, and I would retain ownership and have a 60-40 split of their revenue, as they put it. It wasn't profits, it was revenue. And so any money they make off of getting it placed anywhere, I would get 60%, they would get 40. So that's this offer I got. And so that got exciting. Another child, another viral hit. And so, you know, before you know it, by the end of the day, I have 6 different companies that have reached out to me, and I've got myself a good old fashioned bidding war is going on. And eventually we ended on our company agreeing to 200 upfront and a 70-30 split in our favor of the ad revenue split, which I thought was pretty good. The original 75 upfront and 60-40 split. Mm-hmm. And so I signed the pipe paperwork just maybe an hour ago. We're going to make a ton of money.
Oh, $300.
I want that video to go so viral that poor Luke will have to live the rest of his life with people seeing him being like, hey, you're the kid who scored this, you're the baby that scored the soccer goal. And the hands, like, he can't go anywhere in public without people throwing their hands up in the air. Even when he's 40, they recognize him. Face of a baby. So thank you, Sarah, for producing just very, you know, profitable children.
That's why I had them.
It's going to ruin them. You started saving up for rehab now.
So one other question, and I'm sure you all love us talking about, you know, family stories. One other question for Sarah before we get into the movie. So I talked about how we surprised her. So Brandon, Preston, and I live in Salt Lake City. Of course, we're all from California. But we flew, we all temporarily live in Salt Lake City area, and we flew from Utah to Dallas, and this is something that Greg, Sarah's husband, put together, and we knocked on the door on the morning of your birthday, and we've never all visited at the same time here. Preston hasn't been here yet, so this is his first time. Brandon and I have been here at different times, mm-hmm. and so all three of us were there. So you opened the door. I would love a play-by-play in your mind of what your instant reaction was and how long it took to process that it was all three of us.
Okay, so... Well, first, when I heard the door knock, I looked at my husband and I was like, I'm in my pajamas. And he was like, just answer the door. And I'm like, okay. And it's my birthday. So I'm like assuming, you know, he needs me to answer it, you know, thinking maybe there's like a gift at the door or something and that a friend delivered. May I open the door? And I immediately backed up because I'm sitting there and I got three boys standing right there in front of me. And it was just one of those moments where it's just like worlds colliding because Preston's never been here. And so I was like, no, like he's not on my doorstep. And then I'm like, but they're all three standing here side by side. Like, and none of the rest of their families are here. And it's just, you know, it was just like that moment like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're here. And we get to spend the whole weekend together with no interruptions. I mean, that's awesome. So,
but from my perspective, there were like levels of like there was you were immediately surprised and excited, but then there was a moment you paused and waited and went, wait a second, like, oh, this is a big thing, you know?
Wait, this.
Right. This is a big deal.
It's all of you. You all had to get in an airplane and fly out here.
It required planning.
Yeah.
And then comes mom's jeans in, right? Where like the tears start flowing. And I'm just like so happy. Just, you know. And you all cried.
I honestly wanted to.
tears. He admits I saw to them. Nothing. Everyone had tears.
It was an emotional moment that we're now sharing on a podcast, listened to by dozens.
Nothing is sacred.
So I didn't plan on recording a podcast with you guys coming out here. In fact, so much so that we're literally recording this on my iPhone using the Voice Memos app. And this episode is brought to you by the Voice Memos app, by Apple. So if it sounds a little bit different, not as good quality, my apologies. But we all went and saw The Circle, and it wasn't very far into the movie. Honestly, it was about 5 minutes in, and I thought, oh, we have to talk about this movie together and as soon as possible, because this is special. Backing up a little bit, let's be clear up front that we will be going into spoilers on this movie, but I also want to be clear that you can't spoil this movie. You should see this movie first up. You absolutely should see it and pay full weekend evening price to see this movie because it's worth it. But know that no matter what we say here, it will not change any level of enjoyment that you have. But it's impossible to talk about specifics of this movie. Not that there's any necessary big reveals. If you've seen a trailer, you kind of get what's going on. But we'll be going into great detail. But seriously, don't turn it off and think that you have to see the movie first and listen. Just listen. Just stay on. So this is... The Circle is an interesting film. There wasn't a ton of promotion behind it. Trailers only really started... being aired and shown within the last like few weeks, and it kind of came out of nowhere. And what's interesting about it is that it's written and directed by a man named James Ponsell, who I'm a big fan of. He's made a handful of independent films that have been critically acclaimed, three specifically, I mean, right in a row. He made a film called Smashed with Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. He made a film called The Spectacular Now with Miles Teller and Shailene Woodley, and it's got like in the high 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then he did The End of the Tour with Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg, a movie I really liked. Aaron, it was in his top 10 of the year. He really loved it. A movie about David Foster Wallace, a true story. Excellent movies. And so like I've been following his career. And so when I saw the next thing he was going to write and direct was a film that wasn't only independent, but it was going to be financed by Tom Hanks's Playtone label, his production company. It was exciting because he had Emma Watson on the cast, Tom Hanks, John Boyega, Patton Oswalt, the star of Boyhood, a film that I deeply, deeply love, L.R. Coltrane, who, bless his heart, he didn't choose the actor life. It literally chose him. Everything about this was, to me, immediately interesting because it's about a tech company. Now, there's a lot of movies about technology and something similar to this, but like, you know, I work at a software company. I think it's interesting to talk about like kind of the challenges and regarding privacy and user data. And so when I first saw a trailer, I couldn't tell if it'd be necessarily a good movie, but it didn't look like a bad one. To me, that's the recipe. It's a formula for a good film. And so I was pretty excited. My concern started when they didn't do any press screenings. and the morning of its release, they hadn't released any embargo to actually write. Like, the night before, there were any reviews from Rotten Tomatoes. The night before, and I was like, how are there no reviews posted? Mm-hmm. And then the initial crop came in the morning after, you know, journalists or whatever had to actually go see it in theaters, like, you know, like us regular human beings. And it became clear, the small sample size at least, that this wasn't going to go over well. And it was obvious it wasn't going to go over well when they didn't allow any press screenings. And I thought, no, this can't, you have a lot of veteran people as part of this production, a lot of talented people. It can't go that wrong. Like, certainly Tom Hanks has made decisions, bad decisions. He's made bad movies, but not a lot of them. It's possible for very good artists to make bad things, but that many people together, it can only go so bad, right? Like, it won't, you know, it'll always be maybe at least a little bit decent, you know, but bad, but it can't go like total train wreck bad. I am so excited to announce that this was complete train wreck bad.
Well, I mean, we started to see, so first off, whenever there's a review embargo that lifts like the day of, that's always a bad thing for movies as well as for video games, because when it happens there, it's like, oh yeah, you know your product is crap and you're putting it out there, it's too late, people have made their pre-orders. If it's a video game, they've already picked it up, maybe the night before at midnight release or whatever. It's bad, but it's out there. But when we started seeing some of the reviews, and it was getting really bad reviews, and we had some friends and family that had already seen it before us, and they started talking about how bad it was, that just only increased our desire to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I still didn't believe them that it could be that bad. Like, I knew it would be bad, right? But I didn't think it could be that bad. Because, I mean, look, yeah, sometimes I've heard this on movie sets. Sometimes you can't really tell what's going to be good and what's going to be bad, because you're not editing it. You don't know what the score is going to be. You're not going to know what cuts they, you know. But, like, Tom Hanks is a veteran. He's directed films, a film. He's going to know if something's truly this off the rails, right? Not only was he in it, he was producing it, right? I mean, like, at one point, you got to pull aside the director or something and be like, hey, we got to do something about this. So that's why it's rare to have this many talented people to be a part of something that was so colossally terrible. I can't overstate, in my opinion, how bad this movie was, from top to bottom. I mean, in the initial scene, we get Emma Watson has an encounter, I guess a dialogue, I should say, with L.R. Coltrane, if you want to call it that. And it was so weird, because I remember thinking, it was starting to dawn on me, like, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be really bad, because I didn't know what was going on. The dialogue was such that it wasn't clearly establishing the relationship between the Emma Watson character and the L.R. Coltrane character. And he, reminder, just a normal human being, not an actor, didn't want to be an actor. Didn't want to do this. He got picked as a little kid. His parents signed him up for this. But, like, when he got offered to be in a movie with Tom Hanks and Emma Watson, he did what I would do, sign up.
Like, okay, yeah.
And he's in there just reading lines and not emoting. You know, there's no human emotion. He's just saying words. And I'm like, oh, he's not even trying. Like, I thought it was bold for him to do that, because it's almost like a deliberate, like, I'm gonna show you guys what you get for casting me. I don't act. And it was just that little scene, and I knew, well, this is going to be a special kind of bad. Sarah, when did you know this movie was going to be really bad? What was the moment that you were like, oh, there's no saving this movie?
Probably that conversation, the very first one, when they were talking. I thought, no, this is awkward. I feel like that nothing flowed. There was no, from one scene to the next, it was choppy, and they kept throwing in just like random information dumps, you know what I mean? Where they needed to get you the information, but instead of showing you, they were just like talking it, and it was weird.
What about Emma Watson? Talk about her performance.
Well, I like Emma Watson, so that's why this was a struggle.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
A universally likable, like, right, universally liked and adored person. It's very hard to make unlikable or even, yes, bland or dull, but they did it.
She, you see her in things like the Harry Potter, all, you know, the whole franchise, and she is very dynamic personality and very forceful. And here she's just boring. She's just boring.
they decided to give us one reason that we should care about her. And that reason is that her father has a disability or a disease. That's it. Yeah. Not any reason other than that. We should feel bad for her. That was it. Mm-hmm. There was no like character motivations or anything that was like kind of like whether I mean give us a reason.
No personal drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether to like her or to dislike her or anything. It was nothing. It was like she got a job at the beginning of the movie with this big Google like company, mm-hmm. and we were supposed to be happy for her. I mean, I wasn't happy for her. I didn't have a reason to be. And I'd also had a little inkling that this company wouldn't be such a good thing. but this is when I knew they had done, by Emma Watson's character, they'd done her so wrong, is when I leaned over to you about an hour and 20 minutes in the movie and I asked you a question. What was that question?
What is her character's name?
And what was your answer?
I have no idea.
Well, then she leans over to Brandon and asks Brandon. Brandon's like, I don't know. And then he leans over and asks me. I'm like, ugh.
I had a moment of panic. Because I remember sitting there just thinking, like, I can't believe how uninteresting they're making Emma Watson. She's so liked. Just like her dialogue is terrible. Her character's terribly written. Yeah. It's crucial to the story that we get behind this character. But we have no reason, because we don't know why she's making the decisions that she's making.
No reason to care.
In the middle of that thought process for me, I thought, yeah, because I really want to really root for, and I couldn't think of, in my mind, the character's name, and I thought, oh no, I don't know her name. This movie is more than halfway over. And so I lean over kind of sheepishly like, what's her name? And when you were like, your eyes looked like, I can't believe I don't know. You had the same moment I had.
We've been sitting in this movie for more than half of it, and I have no idea.
How rare. And then I asked you, ask Brandon, or can you ask Brandon for me? And the look on Brandon's face was like,
At that point, I couldn't figure out anyone's names either. I started thinking, what are these people's names? I've been sitting here, investing my time. I know nobody.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we did hear it early on. We just didn't care. Because it seems like the whole point of the director wanted to put out there is like, let's make these every character as boring as we possibly can. Because the other thing is, so her father, played by Bill Paxton, unfortunately, this is probably the last film we're going to see him in. I don't know if there was another one.
I have a rant about that I'll get into.
But he was just as boring as everyone else. Like, and that's hard for Bill. It is hard. It's got to be hard for Bill Paxton to be boring. Because look at everything that he does. I mean, well, I love Edge of Tomorrow. His character, he's not into much, but he's just hilarious. But everything, he's such a dynamic, like, energetic actor. And he's just, like, sitting there, like, delivering his lines, looking bored out of his mind.
So let's be clear about Bill Paxton's role in this movie. Bill Paxton is a good friend of Tom Hanks. They did Apollo 13 together.
Yeah.
They've done several projects together. This was a favor to Tom.
Right. Yeah.
Tom gets on the phone, Bill Paxton.
Hey, you help me save this.
I need you. You know, he didn't do this for me. This was a paycheck. This was a favor for a friend.
Yeah.
And little did Tom know, of course he couldn't know this, that it would be his last on-screen credit. It, you know, is this complete piece of trash film. Yeah. And it bums me out. Thankfully, the strength of his filmography is such, and also the limited role he had here doesn't really, I mean.
Very minimal. He gets a pass.
I mean, yes. Well,
pretty much everyone does because we know they're better than this.
Everyone. Except L.R. Coltrane.
Except, yeah.
He gets no pass.
You know what? Well,
but he, look, I mean, he.
They pulled him from his like 3-to-5 job work at the only Blockbuster. Like, hey, poor guy. Come back and do a movie. He's like, oh, okay.
So, yeah, L.R. Coltrane.
Just as excited, like, as how I delivered it. Just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes regarding him I'm really excited to talk about here in a minute, because there's a couple of things I want to talk about. So we talk about how bland these characters are. They have no real motivations that are clear. What's interesting about this film is that it wanted to be this kind of paranoid thriller, kind of in theme, but there were a couple moments for me that it started to veer into dark comedy, satirical comedy, but went right up to that line, and then I think crossed it a bit, and then pulled right back into parent. I thought it was gonna go full comedy, like, in it, and I would have loved that. Specifically, the scene where she's setting up her computer, or not setting up her computer. She's been there for a week or so.
Yeah, but this is the one where she comes back it's been like a week or so, and then but she has like multiple monitors now. Mm-hmm. But she hasn't like fully set up her profile and hasn't really fully set up her, you know, all of her information in the computer. And like,
they have a social profile.
Yeah, they have a social profile where you like put in all your information, like how do people contact you, your likes, dislikes.
Within the company, just an internal thing.
Internal, within right. the company, so that people can know who you are within the company. And then they have like an activity meter. Well, anyway, that scene is where like two people come to talk to her about that, saying like, oh, hey, we've noticed you haven't set up your like information yet. And the whole scene is just extremely awkward. I didn't know. I started to feel really uncomfortable, and then they continued it, and they continued it, and I thought, I don't know what's happening right now. I don't know if I should, like, and the borderline, like, they appear they're trying to be funny, but then it's kind of also creeping me out that they're saying, like, they need to put all of her private information in there so everyone can know everything about her. And I didn't know what to do, yeah. And it just kind of, like, it kind of came out of nowhere, and it was just extremely awkward.
I didn't know if it was supposed to be funny, and it, like, dragged on for so long. I'm like, oh, wow, Now, like, and I started thinking, oh, there's a message here. That now we're starting to get into the message for the film. It's like a hate against Twitter and Facebook and Twitch and every other social media site. I don't know. I'm trying to find some reason as to why this movie was made in the first place. Well, and I can't quite.
It's interesting. That out. Look, I mean, there's a nuanced conversation to be had about privacy and how much data people share, right? Like, we are an oversharing generation. I share a ton of stuff on social media. The idea is interesting that a company would be concerned that they can't, you know, say they're monitoring their employees and they're concerned that someone's not updating their social profiles and they actually confront them about it. You know, there could be an interesting scene or concept there, but this was so over the top, heavy handed, and they were acting. Like, they were acting in such a weird way, like, the way they were talking and, like, almost being over the top. Like, human beings actually don't talk like this. And that's when I...
Except at Google, maybe.
Right. Well, it's when I first realized, like, oh, whoever wrote this, you know, whoever helped, like, whether the source novel or the screenplay, if it, you know, in the case, James Ponsell, this is someone who's never worked at a tech company, worked around a tech company, and it's, like, this ridiculous... hyperbolic stereotype of like millennial tech employee like at a big tech company that wants to be tracking every movement. It was the way they acted was so over the top, and they must have been directed to be that way because it was so weird. Yeah,
it was weird.
But like, I really kind of like the idea of like, oh, Emma Watson's this character. Like, you know, there are people that don't really either have social media or ever update it at all, and to the point that, you know, you could really look online to try to figure out anything about what people, like their life recently, and you wouldn't be able to find anything. Like, there are a lot of people like that. And I think it's interesting to have that character be that. So that there's a piece of something there. But that quickly changes when she, you know, agrees I won't get into all the details, but she agrees to live stream her life for the most part, with the exception of a 3-minute max bathroom break. Which to me is a personal hell. If I was limited to 3-minute poops forever, well, that'd be a pretty bad time.
Yeah,
but people watching my live stream would have a pretty bad time.
It's like at least a half an hour a day. I can catch up on articles and read.
One of my favorite scenes in this movie is there's this company-wide meeting where we first see Tom Hanks, and it's very much like a Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs announced the first iPod in a company meeting in front of the employees and I think shareholders or whatever it was. So not like the typical Apple keynotes that we get today. But anyway, it was something like that where he's on the stage, this black stage. Everyone's cheering like he's a celebrity, like some sort of rock star. He comes out and does Tom Hanks. You know, Tom Hanks. Makes a bunch of, and I kind of thought this was funny, you know, every single terrible joke he makes that just completely kills in the crowd, you know, like, everyone's just like everything's super funny, like, every, you know, and he gets out there to announce this philosophy and this new product, and the philosophy of like, we should, you know, we can be, why only view some things when you can view everything, and this idea of, it's not even nuance, it's this ridiculous, like, imagine a world where we can track everything. It's like, oh, wow. You mean like drones and cameras everywhere? Whoa, mind blowing. It's like, just not, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, okay. Or it's extremely easy to psychostalk your ex.
So he gets up there and gives a whole presentation and introduces this tiny little circle, new camera. And it was amazing how you can get this crystal clear HD feed and no cords, no nothing. And you can, you know, upload it to the cloud, yada, yada, yada. And now you can really track everything. And the after party, you know, after after the keynote, there's a party. And Emma Watson's character and her friend decide to, she has, you know, access to his office. And she's like, do you want to see his office? And they go sneak into his office to check it out, thinking, there's no way we're going to get caught, right? Like, there's no way that, like, he could actually see us in here. Like, he doesn't have a way to track what's going on in a very important place, a valuable place like his office. And yeah. That was the first moment I was like, oh, I dislike Emma Watson's character. And her friend especially, who ended up really, you know, really going down and got into a lot of hardcore drugs.
For reasons we have no context. No idea.
She had one night, one bad night.
One bad night. Yeah, I was on speed. But I did it once, messed me up, that's it. Now I'm in rehab.
How stupid can it be to break into the CEO's office immediately after a keynote about how he can see everything? This is ridiculous.
Look at these microscopic, like, tiny cameras that can be placed anywhere without a cord. Let's break into his office.
There's no way he put one in there. There's just no way.
Well, I mean, the same thing happens with her and John Boyega. It's like, don't tell anyone what I'm going to show you or what we're going to see down here.
Yeah.
Oh, John Boyega was in this movie?
Oh, that's right.
he was amazing.
A cameo.
He did great. He was very much like one of the droids in Star Wars. Very robotic. I love seeing him channel Star Wars there. It made me excited for Last Jedi. I love John Boyega. And we all know he's a very good actor. Oh, not just because of Star Wars. You liked Attack the Block.
Oh, I love Attack the Block.
We know he's a good actor. This was not a good performance, in my opinion. I mean, words in the page have a lot to do with that. But, I mean, maybe he knew this wasn't going to be. You know, if you had a chance to work with Tom Hanks for a couple of days, because believe me, he shot both Tom Hanks and John Boyega were on set for 2 days. A little more than that. And they got all their scenes in. we need to see him more properly used than in movies like that. But even John Boyega, very, very likable person. That's how bad this movie is, but still worth seeing. That is the message of this. Still worth seeing. There's plenty to talk about that we don't like. There are a couple things I do like, and if you guys have stuff that you liked as well, now would be the time to share that. But my examples my examples are these. When Emma Watson agrees to wear this kind of this pin that's a camera everywhere she goes and live streams to millions of people around the world, it becomes the Truman Show essentially. Mm-hmm. Except she knows she's in on it.
Yeah.
Kind of. She still makes some decisions that I feel like you shouldn't make if you know everyone's watching. Yeah. And I won't go into one specific, but anyway, they do this thing where they have the comments of her live stream kind of pop up on the screen, kind of in rapid fashion, reacting to the things as they're happening. And anyone who's ever been a part of a live stream that's followed, like, the chat box, which is always, it's as dirty as a public pool. I mean, it's like, and it's just, everything is going, you know, and you're like, wow, do I want to jump in these waters? But I really thought it was funny because they kind of captured what those are like. It's because they're so constant, it's so frenetic, and people are asking questions, and then there's always the troll who comes in saying something has nothing to do with what's going on in the chat, and that they actually included that. Like, I remember there was one thought speech bubble that came in and said, I've never been touched by someone who loves me.
It's like it has nothing to do with what she's
like, what? And later on, I caught myself. It got exciting because every time the scenes would happen, I'd try to find it, because they'd pop up. You know, one of them was like, my girlfriend just broke up with me, mm-hmm. and it had nothing to do. They were like in a board meeting or whatever. And, someone popped. And so, like, I thought that they kind of captured the complete mess of that type of that venue for dialogue, mm-hmm. not an effective one. I thought that was great. I actually think it's really interesting. And gave me something to do, since it was kind of like an I Spy. Yeah.
that's what I was going to say. It's way more entertaining than watching Emma Watson on screen.
Well, that's the thing I've never seen with the speech bubbles comments.
That's another thing I thought was so weird. It's like, she's extremely boring. And they have her living in this very sterile environment, this like apartment or whatever. And I'm like, why would anyone be interested in watching her mm-hmm. live stream her life?
Yeah, I
nothing interesting about it.
I saw some of the speech bubbles that said, like, haven't left my bed in a week. Like,
yeah.
But, I'm just like, who's watching her all this time?
But the reality is there are these YouTube families that do these like daily videos that have millions. I don't watch them, and I'm not begrudging people who do. Mm-hmm. But like, I've never been a part of that. I had a friend once who had referenced a name I'd never heard before. And he's like, oh, you know, such and such name. I said, no. He goes, that family? I was like, no, do we know them? He goes, no, the YouTube family. And I'm totally like deer in the headlights, and I'm someone who's on YouTube. I'm very much plugged in. And he shows me this family that the Shaytards, I think, is what they're called. I don't think, I know. Sounds rough. Pretty crappy. I don't know if Shaytard is, well, whatever. I don't know if that's the actual last name or if Shay is and they call themselves something. I don't know. But anyway, it's this guy and his wife and their kids, and they record themselves kind of just, I guess, kind of in an entertaining way, certainly more entertaining than Emma Watson was being, but like, it's just kind of their life, which feels kind of scripted, but spontaneous. Like, obviously, you know that they're recording, but they have millions of subscribers and views to the point that Disney purchased their family. They purchased the, because it's essentially a corporation, their YouTube channel, the Shaytards, and there's a lot of these types of groups. They were purchased by Disney for hundreds of millions of dollars. It was like, I don't remember the exact number. I thought it was over 100 million. It was something absurd. Maybe it was 50 million. But it was a lot of money. And they had this whole community of other groups of people that like record their daily lives of their family. You know, they've created a whole network, right? Not just their family, but it's like, and people, a lot of people apparently like watching just regular everyday people and their lives. Creepy. I don't know if there's a belonging. It is. I think so. I don't want to say that because maybe there are people listening that do this and then maybe there's value in it that I'm not seeing. But like, it's not that far from the truth for people to 10 million people to be watching Emma Watson do nothing, right? Like,
you don't want those kind of listeners, David. If they're watching other families, that's creepy. But then again, if there's money there, I'm going to strap a GoPro camera to you.
I'll say for $100 million.
For $100 million, my daughter, she's getting a GoPro camera.
Yeah. We're starting filming our family tomorrow.
I'm going to sell my family to Disney.
So the second thing I liked about this movie is L.R. Coltrane's character. His name is Mercer. I think it is the only name of a character that was said more than 12 times. Mercer! It was said a lot. And I didn't know he was Mercer for a good portion of that.
I got mixed up and thought that it was John Boyega at some point. So I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's not right.
And so, we didn't actually know John. But the funny thing is we didn't know his name.
They mentioned his name once, but I don't remember.
Well, I'm pretty sure you lean over during the movie and say, who's Mercer?
Yeah, I did. So I did that for multiple characters, apparently. Mercer is ever the artist, made a chandelier out of deer antlers, that he found from like kind of shedded antlers out in the wilderness. And in one of Emma Watson's live streams, she kind of shows, you know, his work of art because he had put one at her parents' house. And, so they've got this antler chandelier. And of course, so I like this because it's absurd, but it's not that far from reality. And there was this online outrage over the idea that this Mercer character killed a deer and then made a chandelier out of the deer antlers. And there's this confrontation, the scene where he's at her work to be like, why did you do, like, he's getting death threats on Twitter. Because people, like, it's not that far from reality. People jump to conclusions, especially kind of like these kind of social justice warriors that want to really correct people. Yeah. And like, people are recording, they were recording with their iPads. They were all like live streaming him when he was at her work during this like confrontation. Yeah. They were live streaming it, which is also another thing why I know whoever wrote this has never been in tech, because no one actually uses their iPad to like record it. But that's true. But they're like, go on, Mercer, you're going to kill another deer. And Mercer turns, he's like, I don't kill deer. And I'm like, why not? Like, this isn't a lion in Africa, like an endangered species. Like, don't kill those, but like a deer? I mean, they just run out in cars and cause accidents. Like, it's okay. That's okay.
Since when did that become uncommon?
But also, I love the idea that these people recording him are these kind of like liberal, like techie, never been outside, never been camping in their lives type of person who wouldn't know that you could get antlers from, you know, shedded antlers. You don't actually have to kill them.
You have to kill them.
Which I think is I thought it was really funny.
It's like an elephant or a rhinoceros.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It never, yeah, it's always on them.
So that would have been interesting if it was rhinoceros horns.
I think that.
I like the angle of what they were doing there because it was both funny and not that far from reality, but that's not very much to like. Was there anything you guys thought, any redeeming values this or qualities that this film had?
Okay. Sitting there, I was like, man, I was not prepared for that question. It just came out of left field, and
I can think of zero good things. But seriously,
Patton Oswalt's in it, and he says hardly anything.
So Patton Oswalt,
I mean, but it's cool that he was in it.
But every time I saw him, I smiled.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Because he's hilarious.
Because he's a funny-looking person. Yeah. And, like, he's both funny, and he's funny-looking. There's certain comedians that don't look funny, even though their actual stand-up or jokes are hilarious. But then there's people where I just look at them and I laugh. Will Ferrell, I look at him and I laugh. Yeah. And he's not inherently funny looking, but there's something about just his, you know.
It's that facial expression. That face. Their face, what they make.
Exactly. And Patton just has this little, like, I don't, like, Pillsbury Doughboy type, like, he has this face that I look at and I just, it's funny. And he's a funny guy sometimes.
It's hilarious.
And he plays one of the co-founders of The Circle, you know, with Tom Hanks. And, he just shouldn't play dramatic roles. He can't.
Yeah.
Because I can't take him seriously. Every time I see him, I'm just like, you're going to be funny any minute. And in this movie, he was not funny. Also, we're all, I'm sorry, three of us were born in the Bay Area. Brandon was born in Sacramento. It's okay.
Yeah.
Hashtag Sacramento totally prep. But we're all raised in California. All of us certainly raised around the Bay Area a lot, which is where our father is from. We laugh often about how the Golden Gate Bridge is used as a prop in mostly disaster movies. But like, there's Emma Watson just goes kayaking. You know, when she needs a break, she goes and kayaks out in the bay right around the Golden Gate, as you do. And I'm looking, I'm like, well, that's not exactly, people don't, certainly not at night and in the fog.
I was like, what is the motivation for you to go out in the middle of the night to...
Yeah.
Kayak
to shark infested waters.
Yeah. Right. Seemed like a bad idea. And then we did get our disaster movie moment because a freighter comes right through
and hit her. Yes, yeah, that's right.
It was pretty remarkable. That is the big moment of the film, the motivation for her to go from not wanting to be on social media to being okay live streaming her life. Everything changed because that of was... that moment. And that's really what it was.
Well, but the disappointing part about that is that the Golden Gate Bridge was still standing after all that. I mean, usually, if you're going to show the Golden Gate Bridge in a movie, it's coming down at some point. I remember we were watching Godzilla. I said, and we find out, oh, he's heading to San Francisco. I was like, oh, that's fantastic. If the Golden Gate Bridge does not come down, I'm walking out of this theater. Yeah. And there's this part where they're all camped on top of the Golden Gate Bridge and Godzilla comes and swims underneath the bridge, completely missing it, and then rises up on the other side. And I'm like, no way. And then as soon as he gets up out of the water on the other side, all these ships in the bay start shooting at him and he falls backwards into the bridge and takes it out. And I'm like, all right, I'm staying.
It's like they literally had to get him in position. Like, yeah. He has to have respect for the bridge.
Yeah.
We got to get him right in front of it. And then it'll be perfect. We'll be able to get it right in the middle. I'll bring the whole thing down. It's never the Bay Bridge, by the way.
Bay Bridge. Oh, yeah. No one cares about the Bay Bridge.
No love.
It's not even seen on camera.
Yeah. No, it doesn't exist. In movies, it doesn't exist. Nope. And this is the one that the earthquake affected. I mean, this is the one that actually is vulnerable.
That's true.
But people are like, not red enough. Yeah, I'm personally a big Bay Bridge fan. So I'm getting upset at these things.
You're like a t-shirt with the San Francisco skyline on it and there's no Golden Gate Bridge. It just has the city and then the Bay Bridge on the other side.
Yeah. I will cut it out.
Cuts it short.
It's The Bay Bridge really is just the like underloved younger sibling. Everyone is totally used. Yeah. Everyone uses them. used by a lot of people. Not appreciated. Anyway. How long have we gone? 50 minutes. Is that what it is? Okay.
Yep.
All right. We should start wrapping up. I wrote a few points down, and I want to make sure there's anything else major that I wanted to hit on. Did you hear other people laughing in the theater at all?
Were there people in the theater with us?
Yes.
I heard myself laugh once.
You heard yourself laugh.
Heard yourself laugh. That's good. But then I realized I was all by myself, and it's one of those moments where you're just like, oh no.
So like, the last 15 minutes of this movie, which were incredible.
Oh, I still don't understand it. I still don't understand.
It's amazing that they had an ending of a film that actually they wanted us to think something, but they didn't want to have actually do the hard work of like actually making a logical like thought line, like actually have a logical conclusion of why X, Y, Z, or you know, X and Y would equal Z, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. They didn't have a clear, like, this is gonna happen, this is gonna happen, and this will be the result. They want to get to the result, and so they mostly just went with like just very broad explanations about things that were really unclear. And then Tom Hanks has, you know, he got to use the one F word in the film. He's like, well, use the F word to make sure it's clear to everyone that the whole thing's coming down.
Yeah, this is like impacting us. Because, well, up until this point, like, I guess we're making the assumption that he and Patton are doing something wrong, something shady that they're not supposed to. But we never know what that is.
Yeah.
They never tell us.
But well, that shitty thing is they want to register everyone to vote.
I thought it was Emma Watson's idea. So she's the villain.
That's another thing we do need to talk about before we wrap up. Boardroom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Someone give me the play-by-play.
She goes to this meeting, and they're like, oh, okay, we're going to have you live stream in one of our boardroom meetings. And it's like a big deal. And then once she's in there, I mean, she feels like, hey, I've got thousands of followers. I should probably speak up, even though I'm just, you know, the peon here in this organization. It started a couple months ago.
A guppy.
A guppy. This
is what they call it.
Which I also feel like should be like a racially insensitive term. But continue. In 10 years, it will be.
But she comes into this boardroom and she has this idea that let's go ahead and force everyone to create an account. What was it? I'm trying
so
to
remember. Okay, this is how it starts.
I'm sorry, I'm setting it up wrong.
So Tom Hanks, he's the one in charge of the meeting. He's sitting there and he's talking and he says, you know, we have it streamlined now so that anyone who's registered with the circle will automatically get registered to vote.
To vote, yeah.
So he's saying, that's great. You sign up an account, it'll streamline it. You won't have to bother with registering, but we'll have so many more people in touch. And then Emma, with a crazy idea out of left field that no one saw coming, we should make everybody register, sign up for the circle. So everyone's forced.
It's so...
Oh, I know. And then
we never saw that coming.
Like, and then like Tom Hanks and Patton are like, oh yeah, looking at each other like, this is a good idea. Like, did you guys not have that idea?
Yeah. Yeah, apparently no.
Not like your goal as a company to try to get everyone registered?
Well, it's the amazing thing. Up at that point, the circle, they're like, we want to get some people signed up on our service, but not everybody.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'd like to push this further. He's like, oh, go on. I like when people say that. They want to push things further. Why don't we have everybody? He's like, what? Like, that we can grow even more if we do that.
We only wanted 1,000 subscribers. What are you trying to say?
Meanwhile, our friend is in that room doing a line of cocaine. And storms out in a hissy.
Like, we have no idea why. No idea. She storms out. She's so mad. And yeah.
Her turn, I mean, we have to say, best friend, okay, she starts out in that movie, she's got like the full makeup and beautiful hair and well put together and she's just cheery and they're having a great time. And then when, after the whole kayak, I almost died, she goes on stage to one of those, the forums where they talk to the whole company, and then it pans over to the friend and she's like in the in the very middle, and it's dark, and her hair, she looks no makeup, almost white makeup.
Yeah, she's messed up. She's
pale, and I'm like, what happened? Nothing happened.
There was a whole storyline there that must have been cut.
Yeah.
It's like she lost a lot of sleep because she was concerned about her privacy.
Of course she's doing well. And like this like evil voice, yeah.
I know.
She was jealous? Like, when did this come about?
But then of course that jealousy like seems super fierce, but it never blows back on Emma Watson because they eventually connect. She's like, oh yeah, I did speed. I'm good now. She's like, we're besties.
I'm in Scotland or Ireland or I don't forget where Scotland, she said she was. I'm in Scotland and I was doing drugs, but now I'm good. I'm like, wait, she was doing drugs?
Also, her Scottish accent, by the way, very shaky. I don't think she's actually Scottish.
No, she is.
I've watched her. Well, she is the worst Scottish accent for someone who's Scottish.
first thing I ever saw her on was Doctor Who. She was a regular for, I think, like 3 seasons. She's Scottish.
Emma struggled with hers too.
With the American accent?
Yeah, with the American accent.
I'm done with Brits doing our accent. Yeah. In the same way they're probably done with us doing theirs.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because John Boyega and Emma Watson, there was a scene where they're both talking. I thought, like, this is kind of funny because there are certain words that both of them say that I can tell it's them trying to do an American accent. Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
It was unnatural.
They could have both been British. Yeah. That would have been perfectly fine.
I would have been 100% okay with that.
Even if her parents both spoke perfect English, I'd have been like, oh, that's fine.
We were okay with
it. There's already enough issues with this movie.
That probably would have changed the entire plot and it would have ended up being
no good. We were okay with Belle having a British accent. She's from France.
That's true.
Everyone else is kind of talking in a French accent and she's like, I'm going to go just British. Is that okay? And they're like, Emma, you do you. So I honestly, I wouldn't care at all. It wouldn't take me out. We should wrap it up. We do want to say rest in peace to L.R. Coltrane, both to his career and to, he dies in this movie in a spectacular way. A lot of people have died inadvertently from drone warfare in this world. a lot of people, most primarily in the Middle East, have been killed by drones. Our first human being killed by a drone in the United States happens in this film. Not in the way you might expect, because it was not an armored drone.
Nope.
And I will leave it at that. How about that? That's a little tease to give you. You know he's going to die. You know it involves a drone. And it's the best part of the movie.
We've got to give you reasons to actually watch this. I mean,
Bill Paxton. Do it for Bill.
Bill Paxton. There's also a dark tunnel. And, you know, if you go far enough in that dark tunnel, the ground starts to get wet. So,
that's normal.
There's a lot of intrigue and mystery. Especially around the plot, because by the end of the film, you will not know anything.
Yeah. It'll give you closure for nothing. You don't exactly understand what, like, the leaders of the company are doing wrong. And you don't get any closure on did anything change, and really what the issue was that they solved, and closure.
I'm just glad that it opens up for either a sequel, a prequel,
the square, the triangle.
You want me shapes the
television series?
The hexagon.
Ooh.
The octagon will be an MMA one.
Oh yeah. And eventually, you know, it gets severe enough, we take it to the Pentagon.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Pentagon.
Yeah.
It'll be a 9/11 movie.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, the circle is actually, it becomes Skynet, and then that's when, like, they take out the Pentagon and we get the Terminator movies.
Oh, but the Terminator this time is played by Dwayne Johnson.
Right. So this is gonna sound really terrible and insensitive, but I have this idea for a really dark comedy, speaking of the Pentagon, about a kid, like a grown man who, you know, his dad died on 9/11, but in the Pentagon, not at the two towers, and his whole life he has to clarify that when he tells people that his dad died on 9/11. They're like, oh, which tower was he in? He's like, oh, not the towers, it was the Pentagon. They're like, okay. I know it's terrible, it sounds really dark, but I feel like the Pentagon people don't really get that much love.
They don't.
Right.
They really don't.
Right, they die too.
It's like,
it's terrible.
9/11, like, we see the shadows of the towers, never Pentagon. I mean, yeah. The Pentagon still stands, right? So it's like, not like it's not there, but like, we just don't. I feel bad. So I think there's maybe after enough time, maybe there's some humor to be mined there, but very dark.
Very dark. People very care less dark. About.
He died on 9/11, but oh, it wasn't in New York. Well, that's kind of. Oh.
You're like, oh, okay.
Anyway, I'm glad I ended on that note. So I literally had to.
We need to cast that movie. What are you talking about?
I have. It's L.R. Coltrane. Is the boy. The dad is.
Nicolas Cage. Ethan
Hawke. Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is going to be in it, but
with the Declaration of Independence. and then we have Tom Hanks as Sully. He's going to be the pilot to one of the anyway, United 93. Again, really dark. I was talking about the last 15 minutes, quickly in closing. I had so many thoughts about this film, and I couldn't remember them all. I had to write them down. So I literally got up from my seat and walked over kind of to the side of the theater so I could get on my phone without it being bright for anyone to write down a bunch of notes. And, and then I didn't realize that the film was coming to an end because there was no clear climax and ending. I was like, okay, it's over, and the credits are rolling. And so I was standing there while people were exiting the theater, and people were laughing, like straight up laughing as they're walking by, and clearly about the film. Mm-hmm. And people were, in a couple instances, I could hear them talking about something specific, or there's a scene or a character. I'm glad that it did get so bad. Like, I'm glad they didn't have real potential, because if this one's like, oh, this could have been so good, but it was so bad from the beginning, and it eventually did cross the line to being like, it was so bad that I enjoyed it. And that's why I recommend it. I honestly think it's a good time at the theaters. Yeah. I'm really glad I saw it with all of you. I enjoyed it immensely.
I was thoroughly entertained from beginning to end, yeah.
Yeah, I was never bored. That's true. They were boring, but I wasn't bored.
Oh, they were boring characters. Yes, exactly. The movie was...
So I have a pitch here. It's just coming to me right now. You know how those Disney films do the sing-along versions later on? Yes. What if they have a version of this one where we can text and do the thought bubbles on the screen? Like we're watching Emma Watson and we're writing things down. I would watch that video. I would watch that and be constantly messaging,
Yeah.
I've never been touched by someone who loves me. Which is not true. thankfully, Lindsay does not listen to the pod. I want to give a big thanks to my three siblings for joining me from my little pet project, my hobby, my podcast. I know you guys don't listen to it, but thank you for... I'm kidding.
Listen to it.
Sarah doesn't know what a podcast was until today.
Nice.
She didn't know we were recording this, actually.
Yeah,
what?
Not everyone listens to podcasts. That's fine. But any last thoughts?
Go see this movie.
Yeah.
Go see this
definitely.
Movie.
Do yourself a favor and enjoy the wreck.
Full recommendation from the four of us. From the four Stoffers, a movie-loving family. Mm-hmm. Four cinephiles with two cinephile parents. So much so that our parents are going to love this movie. And not for the same reasons we did. So on that note, we close this pod by reciting a famous Samuel Jackson line from Jurassic Park. And we will say that in 3, 2, 1.
Hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.